Idaho's Radio, 97.1 FM and 1450 and 1400 AM.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and their guests, and not of Blue Sky Broadcasting.
Hello and welcome to Common Law on 1400 KSPT, 1450 KBFI, and 97.1 FM, and online at northidahoradio.com. My name is Arthur Beislein. I'm your host, and I suppose we should start with, what is common law? I think we could call it a civics variety show, and that just, if that doesn't get you real excited, I don't know what will. It's mainly a show designed to, after practicing law for 25 years, to inform the general public about some of the pitfalls and things that I have seen that you can address without actually having to get an attorney, as long as you know how to go forward in these areas. For example, today we're going to talk a lot about insurance in light of our windstorms and obviously the number of claims that are being submitted. I thought that was appropriate. I also will accept emails asking me questions about individual topics. I'll just tell you now, here's the disclaimer, is I'm a lawyer, but I am not your lawyer. And if I am your lawyer, I'm not acting in that capacity. I am no different than any other attorney you may see on MSNBC or on Fox News. So this is not legal advice. And my only goal is that if you think maybe you should go see a lawyer, that's what you should do. And so the other goal that I have is to provide my actual opinions on certain subjects, which it's really hard not to interdisperse those when you're talking about current events. Who am I? I was born in Sandpoint in 1969. My wife was born here the same year. My mother was born here, and my father moved here in 1949. I tell you this because I will be commenting on your state and local governments, and having lived here a long time, I know the sentiment about the newcomers coming in and trying to run our town. I'll tell you about my education, because I think that it's important that if you're going to listen to anybody, you need to know why they think they have any ability to express their opinion to you. So often people talk and express opinions about various things, and nobody ever says, why do you think you know about that? Obviously, I went to law school. That goes without saying. My undergrad was in finance, not political science and not English. I tell you that because finance involves the study of macroeconomics, microeconomics, international economics, money and banking, fiscal policy, monetary policy, all these things. And I tell you that because even today we will talk about some economic issues as they relate to insurance. So that's what common law is about. If you want to email me right now, I have my email open, and it's commonlaw, C-O-M-N-O-N, L-A-W, 7-B, the number 7, the letter B, at gmail.com. And so we will take a quick break right now, and then we'll be right back with more common law after this.
Working hard every day, putting Idaho first, that's Jim Risch. In the U.S. Senate, Jim Risch is fighting hard to stand up for our values. A-rated by the NRA, Risch is defending our Second Amendment freedoms. Jim Risch cut taxes for Idaho families and small businesses. And Risch is getting tough on China to stop their unfair trade practices that hurt Idaho's farmers, ranchers, and businesses. Jim Risch, getting results for Idaho. Here's Senator Jim Risch.
The liberals in Washington want bigger government, higher taxes, and more spending. They're wrong. I'm Jim Risch, and I'll always stand up to defend our values. I'm fighting to save the American dream, to hang on to our property rights and preserve the Second Amendment. We need less government and more freedom, lower taxes and more jobs. I'm Jim Risch, and I approve this message because America is still the greatest country in the world.
Paid for by Jim Risch for U.S. Senate.
Imagine hiring a logger to cut your hair.
So, just a little off the top then.
Or an electrician to clean your teeth.
10,000 volts out of Dodge.
Sometimes it's just better to start with an expert. When it comes to your car or truck transmission, get it done right the first time. Call on the experts at Burnett's Transmission. Burnett's is absolutely the undisputed expert in transmission service and replacement. They've invested in the sophisticated equipment and certified training required to offer you affordable expert transmission repair. Cars and trucks, 4x4s and motorhomes, manual or automatic. When it comes to your transmission, turn to the specialist. Burnett's Transmission on Highway 200 next to the Hoot Owl. Call them today for a free transmission performance diagnosis, 263-0589. You'll feel better knowing that the experts at Burnett's did the job. Or you could call a musician.
She's got rhythm, dude.
Let's face it, there hasn't been much to smile about lately. I mean, heck, I hadn't seen my smile in weeks. Until I went to Northern Quest. There's plenty there to put a smile on any face. Millions in jackpots every month, great food at Epic, cigars at Legends of Fire, and top-shelf drinks in the lounge at Massalo's. I mean, sure, I was a little rusty at first, but smiling is just like riding a bike. Except, well, I guess with your mouth. Northern Quest. Now playing, now paying.
Whether you're into outdoor adventure, want to freshen up your home decor, or need to find the perfect gift, Windfall has it all at Northern Quest. Shop iconic brands like Filson, Pendleton, Danner Boots, Hobo, Costa, and more in a beautiful modern space. Even use your Camas Rewards card to redeem points for your favorite merchandise or earn points on every purchase. Windfall, a unique shopping experience. Only at Northern Quest. See more at windfallnq.com.
KBFI, KSPT, North Idaho's radio.
Welcome back to Common Law. The intro music is Going the Distance by Bill Conti from the movie Rocky, in case anybody was wondering. I just love that music. It still puts the hair up on my arms every time I hear it. And one thing I forgot to mention, I don't consider it advertising because I'm not charging, but I do free wills, simple wills for veterans. So if you're in the service or you're out of the service and you don't have a will and you want one, shoot me an email and we'll see what we can work out. All right, well, our first topic that I want to talk about is insurance. And I think the first thing we should discuss is the current challenge to the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare as you all know it. When they wanted to appoint this judge, as quickly as they did, everybody was very concerned that that would be the end of universal health care, or they were very happy that it would be the end of universal health care. Well, neither one of these groups needs to be happy, and we'll get to that in a minute. My first question would be, if it's called the Affordable Care Act, then how come those of us who had insurance, how come our premiums went up? Well, to understand that, you got to understand a little bit about the economics of insurance. And I think the best example to demonstrate that is automobile insurance. Everybody has to have automobile insurance, all the good drivers and all the bad drivers. So the insurance company has to insure these very dangerous, reckless drivers, but they also insure all these people who are very good drivers. And so they're all paying premiums, but they're not making claims. That's why automobile insurance is relatively affordable. The idea of Obamacare was the exact same thing, that if all the healthy people have insurance, that will offset the cost of requiring the insurance companies to insure people who have pre-existing conditions. And that absolutely is the case. Insurance economics is very straightforward. You collect premiums, you try not to pay claims. We'll get to that also later, this claims business. But so why didn't Obamacare reduce our premiums? It's because they simply didn't make the individual mandate expensive enough. Had they made it more expensive to not have insurance than to have insurance, then people would have all bought insurance. And they didn't, and so people didn't, and so the insurance companies were put in the very difficult position of having to insure people with pre-existing conditions, but they didn't have all the other policies. So that's why your premiums went up and not down. I think that they kept the mandate low because they realized that that was the main thing people didn't like, the idea that the government could force them to have insurance. Personally, I don't understand what the objection is. Nobody really complains about automobile liability insurance. And then they say back to me, well, you don't have to drive. Well, you don't have to have health care insurance either. But we don't let you die. That's the problem. Is we as a society have decided to scrape you up off the pavement and fix you without asking you how you're going to pay for it. So, you know, once we made that decision, we have to figure out how to pay for this stuff sensibly. To be clear, you are paying for health care with your taxes. You're just doing it in kind of a backwards way. When somebody without insurance has a heart attack, has a $250,000 bill, they can't pay it, county pays it, and we all know who pays the county. That's not always the case, but generally it is in Idaho. That's why we really need to figure out a way to address it in a sensible way, not backwards like that. So anyway, that's why Obamacare raised your premiums. Now, the current challenge to Obamacare that they're hearing in, I don't know, in a few days after the election, has absolutely nothing to do with the individual mandate as far as the ability to require it. The Supreme Court in 2012 already said that the federal government can force you to have insurance. That ship has sailed, and unless they revisit that opinion, that will be the law for quite a while. And attacking a Supreme Court precedent that's that old, 8 years later, that's just a fool's errand. So what is the current challenge? Well, the current challenge is what we would call a challenge to the statute in application, because the Affordable Care Act, as designed, would do what it was supposed to if the mandate was high enough. Well, the decision that upheld the mandate based that on the federal government's power to tax. So when the Republicans got control of the Congress, they eliminated the mandate, which means the feds are no longer generating any tax. So the basis of the 2012 opinion upholding the Affordable Care Act has now been undercut. That's why I call it a factual challenge and somewhat of a waste of taxpayer money, because as soon as any different Congress changes the amount of the mandate, well, then we're back in business and you can be forced to have health care. And it's demonstrative of some of the things that our legislature does in their infinite wisdom, like pass laws that say if we don't like what a federal judge says, we don't have to follow it. That's nothing more than just posturing for your voters, which is what this case really is. And I'm not, telling you need to support the Affordable Care Act or not, but you should be questioning your politicians when they're wasting millions of dollars in legal fees for absolutely no purpose. So that's what the current challenge is. So even if they did say without the mandate, it has to go away, Congress can at any point pass another thing like Obamacare, and I'm sure that they will at some point. So I wouldn't get too hung up on that. And on that note also, people get really worried about these Supreme Court judges, and I try to remind them that the court as it sits right now has made some decisions that I don't necessarily agree with, but they've also told President Trump, you're no different than anybody else. You turn over your taxes, you do whatever, you're just a same old citizen, make your arguments. He didn't expect that. And my point is this, is that these people are fiercely independent. And at that level, which is the ultimate level, nobody wants to be viewed as political. Nobody wants to be viewed as a bootlicker to whoever appointed them. Everything they write is going to be absolutely ripped apart, and that's why they stick to following precedent. And so I wouldn't get too worked up about a Supreme Court judge. And you got to remember, they don't legislate. They have to get challenges brought to them. So I don't think people should be too worried about all that. And so then we have a little time before the next break. So we'll move on to the next topic, which is how do you make an insurance claim? I mean, I think we all know you call your adjuster, your agent, and then they tell you how to get a hold of an adjuster and that kind of thing. But there's a little more to it than that. I mean, insurance is very straightforward. The longer they can hang on to your money, the more money they make. And you may be thinking to yourself, well, what if I only have a $5,000 claim? Why would they want to delay it for a day? Well, you're one of how many $5,000 claims? And so every second they can hang on to your money, they're making more money. And so that is the name of the game, which is what we'll come back to after the break as to how to avoid them doing that to you. So before we go to the break, here's one thing I would like you all to do, because I bet you nobody out there actually has, maybe one or two of you, read your policy. Most people have never read their insurance policy, and that's for good reason. I might not be the sharpest tool in the shed, but I have to have like five different monitors open to figure out one policy with all their cross-referencing in this section and that section. They're by design, they're really difficult to read, but the vast majority of you have never read them. You've read your deck sheet, which is a couple of pages. Your policy is a minimum of 20 pages. A declaration sheet is simply a summary of what coverages you have. It has nothing to do with what is not covered and what is. So if you read to the exclusions of the parts that say we're not covering that, we're not covering this, and then look at your situation. If, for example, if you have a house that has a hillside behind it and you don't have an engineered retaining wall, well, look for the exclusion for landslides. I have a case right now where that's exactly what happened. A slide occurred and took out my client's house off Tallahatchie Road, totally destroyed it, ripped it right off its foundation, and it wasn't covered. And they had no idea, and when I read, I didn't think it would be excluded either, but it was. And given where we live, especially with the snow and the ice and the wind and the rain, you need to really read your policy carefully. That last windstorm we had, we realized, you know, it damaged our dock and realized that, well, we didn't have coverage for other structures. And so I hadn't even read that policy. That's how people really don't ever read them, because they're hard to read. But, and you can't rely on your agent either. If you're going to try to sue your agent for not giving you the coverage you wanted, that's always an uphill battle. So yeah, read your policy, get what you call a certified copy of the policy. So you make sure you have the one that your insurance company has. If you're looking at your homeowners, carefully look at the amount your home is insured for. I haven't adjusted my insurance amount in 5 years, but the cost of construction has gone up a lot. I don't know how much, but a whole lot since then. So if my house gets destroyed, I'm not going to have enough money to rebuild it. So I have to, you know, go figure out, you can get a replacement policy, but they're more expensive. So it's usually better just to get a contractor to give you an estimate of what it would take to put back what you had. And then look at the amount of coverage you have. Because that's another one of the main pitfalls I see, is people being way underinsured. And one last thing about insurance is to remember that insurance wasn't always for profit. Insurance used to be nonprofit. And what is the problem with the insurance being for profit? Well, the problem is an insurance company is always a corporation of one type or the other. Corporations are run by boards. Boards have a fiduciary duty. Now, a fiduciary duty is the highest obligation in the law that you can impose on anybody, meaning attorneys are fiduciaries, meaning that if you're my client, everything I do has to be for your best interest when I'm acting in that capacity. Well, the directors of a corporation are fiduciaries, and they owe this fiduciary duty to the shareholders. And you're not a shareholder. Maybe some of you are. Most of you are what we call policyholders. And so what do shareholders want? They want profit. And so the insurance company's entire job is to pay out as few claims as they can, hang on to any money they do have to pay out as long as they can, all for the benefit of their shareholders. And that just seems antithetical to the idea that I'm buying insurance to have a peace of mind, when the company who's insuring me's express goal is to not pay me if they can avoid it in any way. That, I don't know where you come down on that, but we'll talk more about whether or not private competition actually benefits the insurance industry later. as I said, I was a business finance major. I'm well aware of competitive markets and how effective and desirable they are. But competition doesn't always work for every single product. And we can talk more about that later. And I think now we're ready to head into our second break. And again, you're listening to Common Law on 1400 KPSD, 1450 KBFI, and 97.1 FM. And we'll be right back after this.
Do you hear that delicious sound? No, it's not the freshly fried patty of the Crispy McChicken sandwich. Well, actually it is. But it's also the sound of a debt being paid. Because this golden crisp chicken could be the very first meal you treat your parents to. Yes, parental payback is now available in many delicious McDonald's deals.
Like buy one, get one for a dollar. Every day at McDonald's, mix and match a new hot and spicy McChicken with classics like a McDouble, McChicken, or four-piece Chicken McNuggets. Price and participation may vary.
With McDelivery, get your favorites like a juicy quarter pounder, golden fries, and crispy Chicken McNuggets. Ordering is easy. Choosing which you'll eat first, not as easy.
Every day at McDonald's, share a classic Big Mac pack with two Big Mac sandwiches, two medium fries, and a 20-piece Chicken McNuggets. Get it with McDelivery or mobile order and pay. Price and participation may vary. Delivery prices may be higher than at restaurants. Delivery fee, service fee, and or small order fee may apply.
Get it contactless with McDelivery.
By now, you've probably heard people around town saying good things about North Idaho Collision Repair Center, but you may not know exactly where they're located. You can find North Idaho Collision Repair Center at 148 David Thompson Drive, which is 1.5 miles north of Bonner's Ferry. Just go to the top of the North Hill and take the next left after the landfill, right next to the Homestead Coffee Shop. You'll find North Idaho Collision Repair Center directly across from Bear Auto. If you haven't stopped in before, you're in for a real treat when you visit their state-of-the-art collision center. From the moment that you drop off your keys to the moment you pick them up, you'll notice their commitment to outstanding customer service. They understand the investment you've made in your vehicle and have dedicated resources for continued education to ensure it's restored to the manufacturer's specifications. If your vehicle needs some body work or you just want to stop by and say hi, come on up and see North Idaho's hidden gem, North Idaho Collision Repair Center, just north of Bonner's Ferry.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Tom and Levi.
Tom is the smartest man I know. He's been a professor at two major universities, been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, he told me that he was having problems in his classes. I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. And he was telling them that he was doing it as a favor to them, but I think in reality, he just wanted to get out of there. I was really starting to worry because I saw something was wrong.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me, and my love for him was just immense.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
North Idaho's Radio, KSPT and KBFI.
Welcome back to Common Law. This is Art Beislein, your host. When we were last here, we was talking about some basic stuff about insurance, and now we're going to get to a little more specific topic of what happens when you suffer a loss. Okay, the very first thing you do when you have a loss that you think is covered by insurance is document it, document it, document it. Don't move anything, don't throw anything away, don't touch anything, take your smartphone, your video camera, whatever you have, and document it all. Biggest mistake people make is they just say, well, it was ruined, I threw it away. Well, we don't have any idea what condition it was in before, and you know, they'll make a big deal out of it. If you have good documentation, you will be set. The second thing, and this bit of advice applies across not just insurance, but when you're dealing with any governmental agency, make them take a position. Because what they will do is sometimes, and my own brother just did this. He called our agent, and the agent said, oh, yeah, I don't think the policy covers that, and yada, yada, yada. And then maybe the adjuster might even call. He said, yeah, I don't think the policy covers that. And you go back and forth, and time passes, and And but until you submit a formal claim, nothing is ticking. They have no obligation, they have no duties, nothing. And so they will basically talk you in a circle until you put in a formal claim. And I say that applies with governmental agencies because you go in, let's say you want to do a subdivision or maybe you just want to do a duplex and you start talking to people at the whatever governmental agency and they will just kind of say, yeah, I don't know, do this, try that. No, what about this and what about that? You just need to put your application in and make them take a position because they will just keep talking in a circle. That's the first important thing is get your formal claim in. And why that's important is because once that occurs, certain time frames start ticking for them to respond to you. Statutorily, they have so long to give you a very clear answer as to why the claim is covered or partly covered or not covered at all, and they have to recite to you exactly what they're relying on in the policy to do that. So that's why you make a formal proof of claim, get the clock ticking. And here's the step two. If you have your policy, which hopefully you'll have one maybe in the next couple of weeks after you listen to this, look for the phrase proof of loss. A proof of loss is, it's really a legal concept, but it's also a specific, what we call contractual idea from your policy. It'll say you have to submit a proof of loss sometimes within so many days or not. And then we have 60 days after that formal proof of loss. Now, I told you that statutorily they have time frames to respond to a formal claim, but those timeframes can be altered by the policy itself. And before I forget, here's the big one. Written contracts in the state of Idaho, you have 5 years to file a lawsuit on them. And that would be an insurance contract. More than one, I'd probably say half of the policies I've seen limit the statute of limitations to 1 year. So you have 1 year after they deny your claim to file a lawsuit, maybe two, maybe three. But the point is they can alter that. And so you need to look for the words, you know, file suit against us within so many whatever. They won't call it a statute of limitations. They'll just say you must take action against us in so much time. I've seen that one burn many, many people. And so that's just watch out for that. But back to the proof of loss. Look for the proof of loss because that is one of the ways that they alter these time frames. So you finally get fed up after you've submitted a claim and you say, where's my money? And they say, oh, well, you didn't give us a proof of loss. And so they just built in another 60, 90 days for themselves to hold your money and earn interest on it. So that's why you got to read the proof of loss, see what it requires. And then when you submit your claim, do that if you can at the same time. Because then that'll start whatever time frames that are related to the proof of loss ticking right away. The third thing that will happen after this is, like I said, once you get a claim in and if you got your proof of loss in, they're going to have to make a decision on what they want to do. And they're going to tell you, like I said, exactly why it is or is not covered. And they're going to tell you what parts of the policy that they're relying on. Sometimes you'll be able to actually open the policy and see if you think they're right or not. Like in the case with our dock, it's pretty clearly another structure and we didn't have coverage for other structures. But there's going to be times when you're not going to be able to understand if what they're saying is actually true. And they make it a real point of misrepresenting their obligations under the policy. That's what we call first party bad faith. That's when your own insurance company is trying to put those screws to you, for lack of a better term. And interestingly, first-party bad faith really started to develop about the same time that law, we call it jurisprudence. When you talk about like a body of law, you call it the jurisprudence surrounding first-party bad faith. Well, that started to develop right about the same time that insurance companies went for profit. I think there might be related. But if you can't understand it, then you need to go see an attorney because they will, like I said, misrepresent what's in these policies. I had a case where motorhome, one of those big motor coaches, like the $200,000 deals. Well, it was in a storage, and some guys broke in, and they, ripping out the electronics and whatever, and they destroyed the dash of this motorhome. Well, the company that made it had gone bankrupt in the 2008 collapse, and generally they keep all the dies to make these dashboards. Well, they didn't have this one. So to fix the dash, it was going to cost about $150,000. And so these people came to see me, and they said, the insurance company said that they don't have to fix our dash. And they can just give us the $5,000 it would have costed if they could have found it. And I just said, no, they didn't say that. Make them put it in writing. Well, then they did. I couldn't believe it. I mean, they basically said, just because the part's obsolete, our policy doesn't obligate us to fix your motorhome. So here's $5,000 for a dash that you can't get. And we all know what happens if it's more expensive to fix it than it is to total it. You total it. You say, here's the money, and you total the thing. And so that one was, that ended up, we got that resolved, but that's the kind of stuff they do. I mean, and so, yes, you need to be very wary of dealing with these people. Any time you talk to an adjuster on the phone, if you're in Idaho, you could tape it. Don't rely on that. I haven't looked at the law in a while, but Idaho's a one-party consent state. And since the insurance contract is in Idaho, there's a case that says that Idaho's law applies to whether or not you can tape your insurance company. If you don't want to do that or it's too hard, then what you do is anything that these adjusters tell you on the phone, you sit down and you immediately write an email confirming the substance of the conversation. If they tell you, hey, don't worry about a proof of loss, well, then you write them and you say, hey, you've told me that you're waiving the requirement for a proof of loss. If they tell you they're going to do this by a certain date, you write them and say, this is what we talked about. You have to keep records of all of this stuff. They keep records themselves, but obviously their records are a little more, truncated to their favor. They don't really say all the things they told you because, again, they're just trying to keep you from getting your money any quicker than you should. So that's the main thing to watch out for when you make a claim on your insurance is avoiding things that allow them to keep your money and reading your policy to make sure you're following to the T the steps that you have to in order to make a claim. Because the Idaho courts are, I wouldn't say insurance friendly, but they read the policy fairly strictly when it comes to did you do what we call conditions precedent. Did you do everything you were supposed to in order to get paid? And if you didn't, they may still let you get paid, but it kicks in provisions about whether or not you can get attorney's fees and insurance claims if you have to file suit. They're mandatory because if you have to spend $20,000 to get your $40,000 claim paid, well, you didn't get a $40,000 claim paid. You got $20,000 paid. So they are mandatory, and that's why it's so important to follow the policy to a T. And if you don't understand it, most attorneys are not going to, charge you a giant retainer just to say, look at it real quickly. If you ask me a question generally, I will say, I can't answer that. It's going to cost you some time and some money, and you may not like the answer when I'm done. But it's just worth the money to go see a lawyer about that. And that's all I have to say about making insurance claims. Since I have a minute here left, I'll give you a little bit of advice about hiring an attorney. If you ever have an attorney tell you you have a good case, then you don't want that attorney because there's no such thing as a good case. Anything can happen. You win when you should lose. You lose when you should win. The problem we have is you're not dealing with concrete and steel. You can do everything right as an attorney and still lose. You can be totally in the right and still lose. You're dealing with human beings. So any attorney that says you have a good case, be very wary of that. If you have an attorney that says, look, you should have a good case, but anything can happen, and if you can find a way to settle it, well, that's the attorney you want. And just because they say, we work towards settlement, we all work towards settlement. It doesn't mean we're not working towards litigation at the same time if we have to. So always be wary of an attorney who tells you that you have a good case, because there is no such thing as a good case. And with that, I think we'll go to our next break and come back to common law after that.
Our American spirit is alive and strong. And while we're all going through these unprecedented historical times, we can face these challenges together. Hello, I'm Mark Hemstreet, owner of Shiloh Inns. Although we may wear face masks and practice social distancing, there are no restrictions on making travel memories for business or pleasure. Taking care of our Shiloh guests and employees is the very essence of what we do. At Shiloh Inns, we're open and ready to welcome you to a clean, safe home away from home. You'll find extra cleaning and sanitizing protocols in place for the safety of our guests and employees. At Shiloh Inns, we offer many free amenities like free Wi-Fi and even the kids stay free. So book your next stay with confidence at ShilohInns.com or call 1-800-222-2244. Shiloh Inns, affordable excellence, American family owned and proud of it.
Something very special is happening at Sandpoint Furniture. Hi, Mike here for Sandpoint Furniture. In celebration of our 75th anniversary, Sandpoint Furniture Carpet One is offering exciting sale prices on furniture and flooring throughout the store. Take advantage of great anniversary sale prices on living room, dining room, and bedroom groups. Big savings on fine carpets, tile, and hardwood flooring by Carpet One. Sleep better tonight on a new Beautyrest mattress set, all on sale. Yes, we have interest-free financing available. Sandpoint Furniture Carpet One wants to thank you for 75 great years, and we've been proud to support our community since 1945. We're working hard to be your hometown furniture and flooring store for 75 years.
The Sandpoint Bulldog football team, after getting out a tough 6-0 snowball victory last week over Lakeland, will be the number 5 seed in the 4A state playoffs and will host Hillcrest out of the High Country Conference on Friday night. The Knights are 4-5. They were 2-2 in conference and should be a tough team from the Southeast. Don't miss a minute of the action, starting with the Oaks Fresh Market pregame show at 6:40. Kickoff Friday night at 7 here on North Idaho's radio.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the one in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
KBFI 1450, KSPT 1400, and 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to Common Law. I'm Art Beislein, your host here on KPND, KPS, 1400 KSPT, 1450 KBFI and 97.1 FM and online at NorthIdahoRadio.com. Today we've been discussing insurance, various topics, and I think the last one that I'll talk about before I move on to some other parts of the Civics Variety Show is what we call general commercial liability insurance. Most people think it's good that their contractor who's building their house has this stuff. And, well, it is good in some respects, but mostly it doesn't really work out the way that you think. General commercial liability insurance does not ensure that you're going to have a decent house built for you. All general commercial liability insurance does is if you, for example, have a garage built and it's built very poorly, and it falls down and crushes your Porsche, well, the Porsche will be covered by the general commercial liability insurance, but rebuilding the garage will not. Poor workmanship, bad houses, unless they kill you or hurt your property, well, that's not covered. And it gets better. Not only is it not covered, but even if it's not a covered claim, for example, if you sue your contractor because he built you a really bad foundation. You got to replace it when you sue them. And that's not going to be a covered claim. But here's the really good news for you is even if it's not a covered claim, 99 times out of 100, the insurance company will provide the contractor with a free lawyer, meaning that the contractor doesn't even have to pay his attorney and you're fighting with an insurance company attorney who is getting paid. So it's just really not what you think it is. What most people think of it is what we would call a performance bond, which means that if you don't build it right, then this other bonding company will give me the money I need to fix it. Well, you're never going to get a contractor to have one of those. Which brings me to one other point along these lines, it's kind of related, is making sure you all understand why companies have the letters LLC, PLLP, or Inc. incorporated next to them. Well, that's to let you know that the contractor who showed up in his $85,000 truck, that might not be his company's truck. And odds are it's not. I advise contractors, anybody in business, I say, you start your LLC, you own your tools and you lease them to the LLC. And then when the LLC gets sued, it doesn't own anything. And so, I mean, that's a big pitfall for people is they don't really understand. I mean, I think most people get the general idea of corporations and limits of liability, but they don't really understand that unless you're willing to dig into the corporation's worth, then you really don't know if you're dealing with anybody who will ever have the financial wherewithal to live up to their obligations that you may enter into with them in a contract. So be careful with that. If you find a contractor who seems a lot cheaper than everybody else, don't hire him. That never works out. I mean, I think every single construction defect case I've ever handled was because they were so much cheaper. Well, there's a reason they're cheaper. So watch out for them and remember that just because they have general commercial liability doesn't mean that you can get money if they build you a bad house. And I think that's it for the insurance topic. Again, my email is commonlaw7b@gmail.com. So if you have any questions that, you know, come up, I don't see any emails being sent to me now. But any questions about insurance, if you want to ask me a specific question about something you have going on, you know, obviously I'm going to say every case is different. But I'm willing to answer those too. And any other question you have. Just simple things that you might come across. There'll be a lot of other topics we cover. But just to wrap up, there's some little topics that I want to touch on that don't take a lot of explanation. One is called self-help. And what is self-help? Self-help is when you buy a piece of land and you see a road on it and you get the title report and it doesn't show any easements and so you put up a gate. That's self-help. And if there's any quicker way to Shanghai your own case, I don't know what it is. Courts don't like it. Don't do it. They get really offended. The Idaho Supreme Court has gone on and on about how bad that is, and you don't do it. Go to court, find out, you know, just because there's not a recorded easement for a road doesn't mean there's not a road. And we'll talk more about that when we start talking about your title insurance policies, and what you need to be looking for and, why you need to walk the property, not rely on a title report. We'll get to all that. But roads, easements can exist, even if they're not in writing, even if they're not recorded. And so when you put up a gate, you could be very well violating that person's rights. And the court generally is going to find a way to say that you are because they don't like the fact that you didn't come to court before you did that. So that's what self-help is. Avoid that. My other favorite phrase is possession is 9/10 of the law. I don't know where that came from. I mean, that's really I have no idea. That has nothing to do with anything. One notable exception, and as long as I've got a few minutes here, the notable exception is if you're cohabiting with somebody but you're not married and you've been acquiring personal property, TVs, stereos, jewelry, whatever, for years. Idaho has a case that says, we can't help you. Meaning that she took everything when she left, and I paid for at least half of it. Well, we can't help you. There's just no remedy for you. So, yeah, that's the one-time possession is 9/10 of the law. Yeah, I don't agree with the ruling at all. We won't get into why. I mean, the obvious dangers that such a ruling would create, but, you know, basically encouraging people to grab as much stuff as they can, you know, it's just a really poor ruling. But no, possession is not 9/10 of the law. And along those same lines, title has nothing to do with who owns anything either. And people are like, what are you talking about? It doesn't matter. Title has to do with who can sell something, or who can transfer something, or who can legally say they own something. That really doesn't have anything to do with who actually owns it. And here's how it works. For example, if I hand my friend a cashier's check for $100,000 to go buy a piece of property, and he takes it in his name and not mine, well, I own that property. He doesn't. He holds it in constructive trust for me. Same thing with car titles. Just because you're on the title doesn't mean you own the car. Just because you're on a bank account doesn't mean you own the proceeds of the bank account. It's a problem we see often, especially with powers of attorney. Don't do powers of attorney. Don't give anybody your power of attorney. I mean, there's other ways. Most people do it because they're worried that they won't be able to manage their affairs, and so they create these things, and you really shouldn't do it, because people don't understand that just because they can legally accomplish something, that whether or not they should. Powers of attorney also are fiduciaries, and there's just nothing that explains that to anybody. Like, well, Dad gave me the power of attorney. Well, I took his money out of his account because I could. They don't really make that connection. So those are just a couple of little things. And here's the hook for the next show, which I think will be in a month, but we'll let you know. You can check it out online. Is one, I'm going to have a joke contest. $25, I don't know how I'll get it to you, we'll figure that out, to whoever gives me the best lawyer joke to my email. And I might even kick in five more if I can actually read it on the air without offending anybody. And the other thing I want to do is give you a little homework. I don't know if anybody is listening or cares as much, but one topic I'm going to talk about at some point at great length is what we call these, I don't know, you know it as the nuclear option. You've heard of the Hastert rule, perhaps, which is the rule that says if the majority of the majority doesn't want something to be voted on, it's not voted on. For example, the immigration bill that the Senate passed, I don't know, way back when, and then John Boehner wouldn't let the House vote on it. But that's the idea. And so here's the project. And it's $75 for the person who gives me the best answer to this. And it's, here's what I want you to do. I want you to read Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution. Well, first, let me tell you this. Let's say that here's the problem. The Senate has passed a rule that says 60 out of 100 senators have to approve a Supreme Court nominee. I don't know if that's the case or not. Still, it was the case. But let's just say that they just passed that rule. So 60 out of 170 senators have to approve a president's Supreme Court nominee. That's what's happened. I want you to read Article 2, Section 2 of the United States Constitution. Then Google the phrase expressio unius est exclusio alterius, and that's EXPRESSIO space UNIUS space EST space EXCLUSIO space ALTERIUS. So I want you to consider the 60 out of 100 rule, read Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, Google expressio unius est exclusio alterius, and then tell me whether or not you think that a rule that requires 60 out of 100 senators to approve a nominee would be constitutional. And you can just email the answer. On both of these contests, you have to listen to win, which means that I'm going to be checking my email, and I'm going to read your name on the air. So if you don't want me to, then give me a pseudonym or something else, and then I'm going to say whoever won. And so I'm going to have to see an email right after that for you to collect your prize. And we got to wrap up now. Thank you again. This was Common Law, and I'm Arthur Beislein, and thank you for listening.
K246EU, 1450KBFI, Bonners Ferry, 1400KSPT Sandpoint, and online at NorthIdahoRadio.com.